welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And on the line from Albuquerque, New Mexico, is the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, how have you been?
I've been well, Rob. I was in Alaska, the land of the midnight sun, for about 10 days, and so I'm back now where it actually gets dark and it's easier to sleep.
Okay. Was the sun shining at midnight up there?
Close to it. I was, of course, past the summer solstice, but above the Arctic Circle at times, and doesn't really get dark even this time of year.
Yeah, that's got to be a weird feeling indeed, and a little bit hard to get to sleep, isn't it, when it's like that, when you're not used
sure
to
is.
It?
Sure is.
Yeah. Okay, well, we decided, Mickey, to put bismuth on the menu for this program as you work our way through the, I guess you could say, the lesser-known base metals. It's a brittle metal. Fill us in on the history. When was it first discovered, and the characteristics of bismuth?
Okay, well, bismuth is number 83 on the periodic table, a very heavy base metal. It really is a semi-metal and has characteristics much like arsenic and antimony. It's a little less dense than lead, and it is the heaviest stable isotope known to man at 209, so it's got one isotope. It's brittle, white, tarnishes iridescent. We'll talk a little bit about that later. And it has very poor thermal and electrical conductivity, a very low melting point, and it's one of the few substances on the earth where the liquid is denser than solid. Most notable example would be water.
Now, I'm surprised to learn, Mickey, that it is more abundant than gold. Is it a lot more abundant? There's more of this stuff than bullion?
Well, about twice as much as gold, but that's still only about 8 parts per billion in the earth's crust, so it's quite rare.
Okay, now I've seen pictures of bismuth crystals. Very colorful, spectacular to look at, but that's not the form that you find this stuff in the ground, is it?
Or no, and we'll talk about the crystals a little bit more later, but it occurs as a sulfide called bismuthinite. It can occur as native bismuth, and then there's a bismuth telluride and some other relatively rare minerals. But it is very rare. It's been known since ancient times. Agricola writes about it and occurred in Saxony on the present-day border of Czech Republic and Eastern Germany. And the Incas actually used a bismuth copper tin alloy for bronze knives.
Okay, I was going to ask you, how was bismuth used back in ancient times when it was first discovered?
Well, there's very little information on that I could find. We know the Incas used it. It was commonly mistaken for tin and lead in the early days, so it occurs naturally in a bunch of metals or with a bunch of metals, so presumably it was used just as alloys.
Okay.
Small components of alloys.
Yeah, now you mentioned that it tarnishes quite easily, and bring that into the conversation a little bit further. Why is that an important aspect to consider?
Well, what it does is it forms a protective coating, an oxide coating, which makes it very corrosion resistant. And this has to do with the fact you can actually grow bismuth crystals. I mentioned it has a very low melting point, something I think 270 degrees C. So you can actually grow bismuth crystals by heating in a pan on the stovetop, and it makes these very iridescent stacked crystals that are quite collectible.
Okay.
So I think maybe I'll try that.
Okay. Well, that's what I was referring to, I guess, earlier, wasn't it, when I was talking about these very attractive looking crystals, pictures of them, very colorful and vibrant looking. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, you can buy them, and they're quite expensive, but you can grow them yourself by heating on a stovetop or hot plate. So
maybe buy some
bismuth shot, because it certainly doesn't work in your shotgun. They've tried that, and they still make it, but it shatters in fragments. So any bird that you would shoot would you'd end up with a bunch of bismuth fragments in it. So. So you might as well buy some bismuth shot and make some bismuth crystals, I think.
Okay, you talked about growing this stuff. I detect a commercial venture here. Remember pet rocks? Remember that silly thing, a pet rock? You could actually go to the store, you'd give over hard cash, and you'd get a rock. The darn thing didn't do anything, of course. But
it's just a stream pebble, if memory serves.
Yeah, but at least bismuth, we could grow it. You could watch it grow.
So yeah, you can't really watch it grow. It grows quite quickly.
Oh, okay.
So, and then you cool it down, you've got bismuth crystals. And if you don't like the looks of the ones you get, you melt them down and turn on the stove, melt them down, do it all over again.
Okay, well, I don't know. I think that'd be a hit, just as big a hit as pet rocks, because somebody made a lot of money off a very dumb idea of pet rocks a number of years ago. People ate it up, though. Uses today. Now, you did mention, Mickey, that it was corrosive resistance. So I would suspect that is one of the uses that bismuth has today in terms of alloys and whatnot.
Well, I'm not sure if that is the characteristic that you choose for in alloys. It replaces lead. It's similar as lead, and so increasingly it is used as a lead replacement in the aforementioned shotgun shells, shot for shells, especially in solders. It's used in small amounts in specialty iron alloys. But historically, the main uses have been in the chemical industry, used as cosmetics and pigments. And again, this iridescent color comes into play there. For cosmetics, it can substitute for yellow pigments for a toxic metal that we talked about, I think, last time, cadmium.
Right. Yep.
And it's probably best known in pharmaceuticals, i.e., the pink stuff, the Pepto-Bismol for when you go to Mexico and get the turistas.
Yeah, we've both been there and probably had that. Is there much production right now on a global scale? Is this a metal that's in demand right now?
Well, it has been in demand, but it's a very small demand. Figures are less than 9,000 tons mined every year. It is mainly a byproduct of lead smelters and, to a lesser extent, tungsten and copper smelters. So the total refinery production on a yearly basis is somewhere around 15,000 to 16,000 tons per year. So it's very much a specialty metal, and it does not have many uses. The price has increased over the last, since the mid to late 2000s. It has gotten as high as $12 to $13 a pound. But it's now, with the commodities going down en masse, it's trading for about $8.50 a pound. Mentioned before, it's a non-toxic replacement for lead in certain applications. For instance, the U.S. Clean Water Act requires no solders, lead-bearing solders, be used in any sort of water treatment facilities or metering or anything like that. So it does have uses. It is not easily recycled because all the uses don't use very much, so there's a scattering effect in the uses. So recycling's not really an answer. There's some concern about the antimony sustainability, and the supply is directly tied to the lead battery industry and the recycling of lead batteries. But those have increasingly, primary lead batteries are increasingly being replaced by recycled lead batteries.
Right.
So there is some concerns about sustainability of the supply, but that said, the price is down 50% from a high of about 3 years ago. USGS says that U.S. imports 92%. Mainly that comes from China, where there is some primary production, smelters in China and Belgium, The old Peru smelter La Roya is been tied up in legal squabblings and strikes for the last few years, so that supply is no longer available. That's the Doran facility in the Central Highway of Peru. There is no government stockpile in the U.S.
Okay, now you did, in wrapping up, Mickey, you did say there's some concern over supply. At the same time, the price of this commodity has been hammered lower. For listeners who may be asking themselves, can I make money off this story? What do you tell them? Is there an investing angle that's worth pursuing here?
Well, maybe if you want to grow crystals on your stovetop manufacturing unit, I don't know. But there, you know, because it's not a primary metal significant amount, mined only in a couple of places in the world, mainly in China, it does not really fit into junior scenario. Now, that said, there is one junior company that has tried to make a go at a interesting deposit in the far northwest territories, something on an order of 150 kilometers northwest of Yellowknife. But this deposit is dominated by gold and cobalt, but it also has significant bismuth and a little copper in it. And they've been working on a metallurgical treatment for it down in Saskatchewan. But here's the scoop on this. A feasibility study done last year in 2012 showed it was sub-economic with a negative net present value at metal prices in mid-2012. So given the fact that all metal prices have decreased since then, good luck on that one.
Okay. Well, nice way to wrap this one up. Next time out, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I think we've pretty much exhausted the base metals.
Mm-hmm.
So I think now we're going to go into what we call in the geology business the toxic metals, and we'll start off on that with at the lower end of the periodic table with arsenic, and then we'll do mercury and thallium, and we can probably find another toxic metal or two in that basket. So we'll move into the toxic metals next.
Okay, great stuff. Thanks very much, Mickey, and we'll reconnect in a couple of weeks.
Okay, Rob, I look forward to it.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. And you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.